Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
2:06 on this Friday afternoon. Chad Hartman back here with you on CCO. Dr. Michael Osterholm from the Center for Infectious Disease Research at the U of M and so many other accomplishments is nice enough to join us, his weekly appearance. Mike is with us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Always a pleasure, sir. It was 6 months ago today that the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic. In those 6 months, Mike, what has this country done best? And what are the areas where we need to do much better and ideally as soon as possible?
Well, first of all, it's good to be with you again, Chad. And it's hard to believe it's only 6 months. And it seems like it was just yesterday. At the same time, it's the longest decade, 6 months I've ever spent in my career. So it's kind of a combination of both.
Understand.
Yeah. You know, we clearly have activated the research and development community on the vaccine issues like never has been done before in all of public health. And I give us great credit. The work that's being done right now and the speed at which it's being done is remarkable. I believe it is being done as safely as possible. And I think we will, by the end of this year, have data on vaccines that will inform us as to whether or not they are safe and effective and how we proceed with that. Now, having said that, it'll still take us months and months to get people vaccinated in this country, even once we get these vaccines, because the production capacity is still going to be in the tens of millions of doses. And very likely, all these vaccines are going to require two doses. So in a sense, we're talking about 660 million doses of vaccine, not 330 million doses of vaccine. And so that's going to be a real challenge. In terms of the things we haven't done well, I think we surely have not, as a country, understood yet how to control this virus in a meaningful way. The one exception I would say to that, and this is clearly not a partisan statement, but the state of New York, you know, they have been flat now for the last 12 weeks in cases. They've had a number of days without, sizable numbers of cases or deaths, which is a remarkable feat. And I give them great credit after having gone through kind of a critical house on fire event in April and early May. They've gotten it right, and they've shown the world that you can control this virus. It's just a matter of whether you're willing to do it or not. And as a country, we've not been willing to do that.
What should we do then? I mean, about 5 weeks ago, you and Neil Kashkari, in an op-ed in New York Times, called for an even stronger lockdown to say we can really dramatically change this. We can slow this curve. We have to make these hard decisions. That obviously has not happened. Knowing what's worked in New York, knowing your scientific background, what should we be doing that we're not doing now?
Well, I have to come back to that op-ed and say that that's how we still should be doing. Now, people say it's not going to be done. We can't do it. Look at the pain and suffering it's caused. Don't forget that we advocated strongly based on the change in our economy, where we've gone from 8% savings to 22%. And we could finance all of this with U.S. dollars paying interest back to U.S. residents, U.S. investors, just by borrowing from our here. And the data from the U.S. Federal Reserve is quite clear and compelling that it's costing us much more to bleed slowly, in a sense, with this virus day after day after day after day, 1,000 deaths a day, 40,000 cases today. It's going to go up shortly with the massive spread in the college settings and getting into the rest of the community. That's costing us big dollars. We're actually, if you look at our GDP, you look at activity in the public in terms of the fear or lack thereof of going back into public spaces from the European countries that locked us down versus us, big, big difference. So I just come back to say, it's not just about controlling the virus. It's actually bringing the economy back. So people would be held, if we did this again on a regional basis, wherever the virus is really out of control, everyone would be held whole. That has to be part of the requirement of what we advocated for. So until we do that, we're just going to keep seeing this happen. I mean, we hit 67,000 cases a day in late July. You saw what that did in some of the states. Now the upper Midwest is surely not in good shape in terms of what's happening here. And, you know, we're going to, I think, go back from 40,000 cases a day with the school and college university openings. We're going to see the spillover. We're going to get into the fall heating season where people are going to be indoors much more, which will greatly facilitate transmission. And we could easily see big numbers again. That's going to cause the economy to be really in tough shape. And so I think, you know, we just have to make a decision what we want to do about that. Meanwhile, New York continues to reopen more and more, and in the absence of cases.
So let's stay with the fall, Mike, because in about 6 weeks, a lot of this country, including us, we're just going to be inside significantly more. And if those changes don't happen that you think we should do, that we should model New York and really could turn the tide, if they don't happen, how different will the next few months be compared to what's happened this past summer?
I think you're going to see a lot of transmission. You know, just take a step back and remember that our best data as of today says that between 10 to 12% of the U.S. population has already been infected by this virus, meaning that many of those will hopefully be immune from future infections for the near term. We can have a discussion about durable immunity later. But so 10 to 12%. This virus will not slow its transmission down until we get 50 to 70% of the population immune, either through vaccine or through natural disease. So for all the pain, suffering, death, and economic disruption we've had to date, we're only at a 10 to 12% of the population infected. We got to get to 50 to 70% to slow transmission down. We've got a lot of wood for this coronavirus forest fire to burn yet. And so I think, you know, we get into the fall, there are a lot of susceptible people that are going to become infected unless we do something differently. And, you know, if the society decides not to do it, then we just have to be prepared to live with, you know, overflowing intensive care units, you know, friends, colleagues, and family members who are going to die. And it's that straightforward, simple. It's up to us. We do know how to control this. We can control this virus. It's a matter of if we want to. And I think that's the challenge that I find so difficult as a public health professional, is just that fact that if this were something we couldn't control, that would be different. But this is something we can't control.
Dr. Michael Ostrom is with us here on CCO. So let me ask you about Dr. Scott Atlas. He's become very prominent for the president. There are people who embrace him. I know just in the last 24 hours, some Stanford colleagues have pushed back. They're concerned about what Atlas is saying. Atlas talks about herd immunity. In the way he's talking about it, is that different from the way you're talking about it? And when people think of herd immunity and the best way to approach this, what should they take away from that conversation?
Well, I don't believe that he and I are talking about it in the same way. You know, I'm not sure how he's talking about it, because I've never seen anything really clearly stated by him that goes beyond just, you know, a line here or a line there. But what has been often suggested is we just did it like Sweden, where right now case numbers are low. That's just a matter of time. They'll come back up again, just like we've seen in other areas of the country where, you know, cases come and go as we have a big problem. We tighten up, rates of new transmission drop, and then only to come back again 3 to 4 months later. We've seen that around the world. And so the herd immunity is like gravity. You know, you can't argue with it. You can't kind of just forget about it because you don't want to deal with it. You know, we will see transmission continue of this virus. And, you know, I remind people that, as you declared, you know, we're 6 months into this pandemic, as the WHO declared. Of course, we said on January 20th it was going to be a pandemic, so we kind of have another almost 2 months on them. But, you know, you've asked me in the past about analogies, and I've kind of likened this to, you know, the forest fire analogy. But I also can, from an inning standpoint, let me just say, we're still in the middle innings. We got a long ways to go yet. And people have to understand the choices we make right now will determine how it does play out in the next 2, 4, 6, 8, and 12 months. I get people asking me all the time, will we be going on vacation a year from now? You know, it's going to depend on part how we deal with this. And, you know, we will likely not have vaccine available for everyone by that time. But I worry that a lot of people won't take it. You saw the poll numbers today. 63% of U.S. Americans are questioning whether they should even take this vaccine. Well, if they don't, I will promise you a year from today, we will not be going safely on vacations. We will not be in public spaces safely if, in fact, we don't change what we're doing and we don't have a successful vaccine that the majority of people are willing to take.
Okay, two last topics, and one of them is tied to vaccine because I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, for the average person who wants to take the vaccine but says, I'm not sure I want to be the first person to take the vaccine, what is the scenario where that person, he or she, should feel confident about taking the vaccine? What will they need?
I can only put it in one simple way. You know, I can take all the science that I have, knowing what I know about risk, knowing what I know about safety, knowing what I know about this virus, and I will tell you that I will not recommend to my family, my loved ones, my world, or me to take this vaccine if I'm not completely convinced of its relative safety and its protection against this virus. So, you know, I surely would not want the world to think that I'm that smart that they should follow me. But if get in line, I'm happy to be up front of the line, and I won't take it until I am convinced and I'm, for myself and my family members, that it's the right thing to do. So if you want to wait till I get in line, go ahead. But that's how I will look at the standard as to where I'd recommend you can decide to go.
I understand, Mike, that in February and March, that it was a reasonable explanation to say the country wasn't ready for hospitals and potentially everyday citizens to have N95 masks. That was 6 months ago. I still read stories all the time about hospitals with significant shortages and hospitals where people are using their N95 masks as long as they can. I still see very few people in everyday life who have N95 masks. Is that fair that we're at this point and we're still there, or should we be much further along?
Well, I don't know if you can put it into fair or not fair, but you can put it into right and wrong, and it's wrong. It's wrong. We do not have a national plan right now for how to respond to the personal protective equipment issues. The shortages are real. We're not even at what I would call a high use level right now. That will happen when our case numbers go up substantially in the months ahead. And we don't have a national plan for this. We surely should be doing more. You know, I will say, you know, we're lucky here in Minnesota with 3M here, who has done, you know, incredible work on this issue. Has been really a national hero is from an organizational standpoint of producing N95s and getting them out. But it's a sad commentary that here we sit at this point and we put our healthcare workers constantly in harm's way. I come back to the point I've said in this show before. We have over 1,000 healthcare workers in this country who have died from COVID-19 infection. Not all of them, obviously, acquired on the job, but a lot of them were. That is just inexcusable. simply inexcusable. So, yeah, I have the same feelings you have about the protective equipment. And I have family, loved ones, and dear colleagues who are on that front line every day. It really scares me.
Great stuff today, Mike. Stay healthy. Enjoy the weekend.
We'll talk next week. I'll see you later. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.